Hey everyone, welcome back to ZCast. It's been 2 weeks since the last one, and I am actually recording this on the day I released it because I failed at planning. I have been on vacation for the past week and will into this week. My vacation has actually been really good. I have been doing a staycation. I was going to travel to the Seattle area for a conference, but I decided against it. I've just been having a blast not working. I realize I'm repeating myself, but seriously, it's been good for me. It's been a while since I've had a vacation where I can just not think about work, and I have opened the work Slack exactly zero times. It has been glorious. I've been working on a little Pikmin video essay, and I think I'm gonna just film it and produce it this week, and that might be my main project for the rest of the month. Also, right as I went on to my vacation, I built a new gaming tower. My old gaming tower was fine, but I wanted DDR5 for faster compile times. And I have that. I have a 7950X 3D. I have two sticks of Trident Royal for 64 gigs. I would have gone with either 96 or 192 gigs of RAM, but my local Canada computers didn't have any RAM sticks that big. Apparently, with Zen 4, if you put four sticks of RAM in the device, there is a good chance that it won't boot normally. So I didn't want to deal with that, and I'm okay settling for 64 gigs of Unicorn Vomit Trident Royal. Really is a nice build. I should get a picture of it on my Twitter account at some point. I went with a Fractal North, and it has that beautiful wood grain pattern. I've also managed to avoid using a Microsoft account on this PC so far, and I'm going to try to do that as long as I can, because the second you log in with a Microsoft account, OneDrive gets enabled, and your documents and desktop folder just convert into OneDrive folders automatically, and it adds extra latency to every time you access those folders, and I just don't want to deal with that. I want the files on my computer to be on my computer. You get that, right? Well, I have actually gotten some stuff for the podcast done this week. I gave ZCast an RSS feed. I had to reverse engineer how podcast RSS feeds work a little bit. That means I had to open podcast RSS feeds for some popular podcasts, look at the weird XML tags, add some XML namespaces, and do a bunch of iterations in order to get some random podcast RSS feed validity checker satisfied. And yeah, I have an RSS feed now. I will post instructions on how to subscribe to it on my blog, along with instruction videos for things like Apple Podcasts. And I don't know if Spotify allows you to add your own RSS feed. I'm probably gonna have to make a Spotify account again in order to create a podcast on their end. I don't know. I'll figure it out. It's not been a priority. Over the week, I did also experiment a little bit with Go and HTMX, and I made a little SAS thing. It is a program called HeaderWatch, but without any vowels. So it's like HDRWTCH. I'll leave a link to it in the show notes. It is an incredibly simple thing. You log in with Telegram, and then it adds some URLs to have it query. And every 15 minutes or so, it will send an HTTP request to that URL, get the last modified header, and then if that changes, it'll send you a Telegram DM. That's like the entire thing, and I kept it really simple. I use HTMX for things, so when you hit edit, it will just have a form show up with HTMX and all of that jazz. Each run has its own page so that you can view details about what happened. I really like it. This is like really simple, really basic. I think I have four users right now, and I'm at I'm at zero ARR for it right now. Well, I mean, about half of it is that I only have the free tier implemented, and I didn't actually implement being able to pay. There is a documentation page for how to pay, and it's email me, and I can set you up with a payment plan somehow, which is code for I haven't implemented it yet, and I probably need to have enough demand for users to want to have 50 things to monitor. Probably going to add something like Expr to allow you to query arbitrary headers as well. I don't know. I have just been enjoying messing with it so far. Lots of fun. I built it on Go, HTMX, and Gorm. I was going to use Postgres. I was encountering some weird issues with Gorm's auto migrations with Postgres. I don't know what's going on there. I tried reconstructing it a couple times and wasn't able to get something that made sense, so I just went with what I knew would work, and I'm using SQLite, but specifically SQLite compiled to WebAssembly. It is not the most elegant thing in the world, but it does work. And realistically, this service is so low traffic that it doesn't matter. Even though, like, theoretically I'm handicapping it because having it with the exact way that I'm using SQLite and WebAssembly means I can only have one request to the database at once, read or write. But realistically, with SQLite, that's already the case. So whatever, it's fine. I'm very happy with it, though. For a hack I did in like a day and a half, it's really cool. I have something that is basically a product and does have a path to being useful. Yeah, I'm going to be using what I learned to make other things, like a tool that gives you webhooks when package versions change in distribution repositories, or something that makes you automate a social media posting queue. So you just put ideas in on one end, and it tells you when it's going to be posted on the other end. So while I've been on my break, I've been talking with people in the Patreon Discord. By the way, if you're subscribed to me on Patreon and you don't have your Discord account linked, yeah, do that. Because I do talk in the Patreon Discord a fair bit, and I post a lot of my incomplete stuff. Hell, I'm actually recording this in a private voice channel in the Patreon Discord, a thing that I probably need to advertise to my patrons better. But someone asked me what my thoughts were on my Kubernetes home lab setup now that I've had it for a couple months. And it actually took me a second to realize that I haven't had to think about it. My home lab has just sort of existed, and I've been pushing stuff to it and running things on it, and like, it's just been effortless. Like, sure, there was some initial friction getting things set up, but once everything's set up and all the automation is going, like, I don't have to touch it. I just put in jobs on one end, it puts them to the machines through some scheduling algorithm that I don't need to care about because it just works. In the process of making my home lab exciting, I have made it incredibly boring. I love it. This is actually kind of nice compared to my previous setup where I had to think about the ways it was implemented and scheduling things between machines and resource caps and backups and everything. And now I just create a persistent volume claim, and it will automatically get scheduled for backups once a day so that the backups are offsite. And I have a second tier of backup in Glacier so that they're incredibly offsite. And it's in Glacier, not in Northern Virginia. It's in CA Central One in AWS. But it's just been effortless in a really great way. And on that line, I had some takes recently on whatever we're calling Twitter now. These were actually inspired by a Hacker News comment, of all things. Yesterday or the day before, I posted an article about how and why I moved my IRC client from running as just a program on my main shell box to a VM in my Kubernetes cluster. One of the top comments in that thread is by someone named ERU Labs, and they had some insight that really made me think and realize that of basically a core mistake that I've made a bunch of times over my career. What they said is, quote, "In site reliability engineering, the real paradigm for complexity is not simple versus complex. The real controversy is unique versus standard. Yes, the standard approach can be more complex than doing things, quote unquote, simple, but it is better in practice to have a single approach rather than many individually smaller but in aggregate more complex approaches." This really made me think. I have been the kind of person that has been outspoken about like the way that you're supposed to do these things, what tools you're supposed to use, what methodologies you're supposed to use, how things should work. I've thought about it in terms of simple versus complicated and not in terms of unique versus standard. Now that I'm thinking back, a lot of the companies that I've worked at where I had a really good time with operations stuff was where everything had a standard way to do things. Like when I worked at Heroku, there were two tiers of applications, really. There was the platform itself and everything else. And the platform itself couldn't be deployed via Heroku because, you know, it is Heroku. You can't deploy Heroku with Heroku. That doesn't make sense. Everything else that could possibly be deployed on top of Heroku was. This meant that the way that you deployed internal Heroku components was the exact same way that customers deployed their external apps. So just through sheer usage and our own work, we had empathy for the users and we had really strong knowledge of the platform. And we could help people when they had issues. Because as a side effect of using the platform as avidly as we did, we were experts. Yeah, I've never really thought about Kubernetes as the unique versus standard conflict and how if you have Kubernetes as the standard way to deploy things, deploying an IRC client as a virtual machine via Kubernetes does make sense because then that way it's standard. It's a bit unique, but it's only as unique as it requires for the workload. And then everything else is standard. Even though the base infrastructure is a little bit complicated because Kubernetes, let's face it, Kubernetes is the most generic program ever made. It is not exactly a simple thing, but because it's standard, there are a lot of shared assumptions that you can get about how individual things work. Data is stored on persistent volumes, and then you can drill down into, oh, we're using Longhorn for these persistent volumes. You can make assumptions about how things work, and then you can drill down into the exact implementation only when you need to, but otherwise, you just focus on the high-level details. In that light, it does mean that things that look complicated are actually simple because there's less overhead when you're switching from concern to concern. Like, even though my IRC client is a virtual machine on Kubernetes, the fact that it's on Kubernetes means that when a machine has a kernel panic or powers off or something, it'll reboot and it'll get scheduled to another machine without me having to think about it and without any manual human intervention. Not to mention, because I have things in persistent volumes and I have Longhorn set up to automatically back up my volumes to the cloud, I don't have to think about the backups. They just happen. They happen out from under it, and it doesn't just back up all of the WeChat configuration or my logs or anything. It backs up the entire machine so that if my house catches on fire, I can pull that backup and rebuild it and have the exact same thing that I lost. And sure, this is building on top of complexity that won't look correct from a software engineering standpoint, but that's not the kind of correctness it's going for. This is more of trying to go for like end-to-end flow complexity, because the actual cost of doing something the simple way by just setting up a VPS somewhere and running things via SSH means that that is a unique snowflake, and that is separate from how everything else is done. Which means inevitably when things have issues, you have to handle that differently than everything else. That handling things differently than everything else bit is the real thing that you want to avoid in site reliability work. Because if things are standard, then your knowledge can transfer and you don't have to care. This is really like an insight that I've never really thought about. And I understand a lot more now. I understand why people have things that look complicated, because everything is built off of fundamentals that have shared knowledge and transferable knowledge between services. I'm not the biggest fan of frameworks because they bring in a lot of those assumptions that I disagree with or have views about how things are done that I disagree with. At some level, if you use a framework, you don't need to implement the framework. If you use a framework, then the shared mental model of that framework applies for other things. That really liberates you from having to care. HTML rendering can happen however it needs to in Rails as long as HTML is rendering. Sometimes building things in a complicated way actually makes them simple, because then all you have to care about is the complexity of the workload, and everything else can just be from experience with other workloads. Yeah, lots of really fascinating insights there. I need to write this up as a CFP for SREcon or something. Thank you so much for those thoughts, Aeru Labs. I really appreciate it. I get fan mail from time to time. I got an email from somebody that basically just asked me a bunch of stuff about why slash how I do what I do when I write. I got a bit inspired and I ended up writing like 1,250 words to this poor person. And I think that a lot of this is interesting enough that I captured it into an article. I posted it on Patreon, LinkedIn, and X, but I'm just going to go over this and read both the questions and my responses because I think that there's some interesting insights here that y'all may enjoy. So the first question is, how is your blog so awesome? I'm glad you think that. I try to make sure that my blog reflects a balanced view on my work, my creative skills, and other things I do. And it's a hard balance to meet, but I think I've hit a sustainable one. The second question is, how do you capture ideas? This is going to sound really, really, really basic, but I just write them down. I just do it in chat. I'll do it in Apple Notes. I'll do it on paper. I just write it down when I'm inspired. It's actually kind of annoying that my creative process is so heavily dependent on me being inspired by things, because that makes my output inherently inconsistent. But that's why I write them down, because I know that my ideas and creativity is going to be inconsistent. If I can capture it in the moment when it happens, then when I want to write something but don't know what to do, I can go back to that list of things that I've already written down and go from there. And sometimes when I'm writing things down, I'll actually pre-chew the idea a bit. I'll toss it around. I'll add some outlines. I'll add some bullet points. I'll think out where I want it to go. This actually ends up helping me because a lot of the other secret to my creative process is that sometimes I don't actually start writing things until the idea has festered for a bit, until I literally cannot do anything but get that idea liberated from the confines of my skull and subjecting it to you unsuspecting people in the public. I find that when I do that strategy in particular, that's how I get some of my best work. The third question was, do you write daily? I guess there's actually several different kinds of writing I do. Technically, a lot of the writing that I do doesn't get published. And this is only true if you consider writing to be not just the stuff that I literally post on my blog, but also things like chat messages or internal forum posts at work or journal entries or stuff like that. A lot of that, or even like production notes on how to make videos, like that Pikmin video essay I made. I have like 2 to 3 pages of side notes on how I want to edit the video or what footage I need to capture. Like there's this checklist here of Pikmin 2 on the Switch. Get footage of a bunch of Pikmin carrying treasure to the base. Or go to the treasure gallery and get video of the pluckaphone, zoom out and go around and stuff. That stuff never gets published. I do sometimes drop it in the patron Discord just as a little bonus and like a snapshot of what I'm working on, but it doesn't really get captured anywhere or published because it's really there to help me organize what I'm making. Or all of the scripts that I make. Oh my gosh. When I make videos, I do an entire screenplay and I will have notes about what I want to be on the screen. I will have notes for video effects to add. I will have notes for if I do this like shot with a camera or voiceover like this or whatever. There is just a lot of stuff that does get made but never published. And the next question. Do you write based on a plan or just whenever you can? I try to write at least 4 articles per month on my blog, once per week. If I had my stuff set up a bit better, I would want to have a bunch of those articles put into a queue and then have that queue automatically get drained every 7 days or so. And that way I can have a backlog. So when I'm having a low energy week, like I have been for most of the first half of August, that it'll just automatically come out on a schedule and I don't have to think. This is why I'm making a social media post queuing thing, because I would love to just be able to put stuff in when inspiration strikes and then not have to worry about it. And sometimes I'll just do things and I'll talk about it in like IRC or the patron Discord or other Discords or DMs on Signal or something, then I'll just have this realization like, wait, shit, I should write about this, shouldn't I? And then I'll go write about it, and then I'll publish it, and then I'll find out it's on the front page of Hacker News. It's a thing that I have to deal with that you'll probably never have to deal with, but it's my curse as an artist. Sometimes the inspiration just happens. Sometimes I'll think, huh, I want to make my main shellbox a Kubernetes node. What is my shellbox doing, and what of that can I farm out to other machines? And then, you know, I'll go do the research, and even though I have configuration management for my shellbox machine, I still am not entirely sure what runs on it, because some things, like the IRC client, were just ad hoc things in Tmux, or it's also where I manage all of my Terraform infrastructure, and that is mostly done through Tmux sessions and the like, so I'm probably going to need to set up a super admin VM on my home lab and put all of the private keys into it and have that be how I use Terraform. I don't know. But in the process of doing that, you know, I discover things and I experiment, and sometimes they work out. And if they work out well enough, it's usually interesting enough that you people like reading about it. So I just write it up, publish it, and just let it happen as it does. I can't really plan the ways I get inspiration or the creative drive to make things. Sometimes it just happens. And I've learned the hard way that fighting that drive back is worse than just letting it out and having it exist. You can't alphabetically sort a river. The river will flow in violation of your order. The next question was, do you write other stuff? Anything, books, a diary or something? Yeah, I am working on, well, working on is a very tenuous word for one of these, but I have two book projects in progress at some level. I have Spellblade, which is that novel about a sword, what the hell do you call someone that uses a sword for battle? I know that with like magic, you call them a spellcaster or something, but like fighter, warrior, I don't know. But it's about a, let's just say a fighter that realizes they have an innate talent for magic in a world where it is commonly viewed that you either have a talent for battle with your body or battle with magic, and there is no middle of the road. And I've been meaning to finish that for a while. I just haven't had inspiration. And the other project I'm working on is Tekaro. Tekaro is tech satire. It's specifically like Black Mirror or Twilight Zone style satire. I've talked about it on the podcast previously. If you look at episode one, there'll be a bunch about it. But that's been hard because a lot of my ideas have been turned into press releases lately. And that means that they'd be too real, which means they wouldn't be funny enough to write about and not satire. And yeah, the friend pendant destroyed three of my ideas in one fell swoop. But I absolutely love the marketing video that they did for that, because that is exactly the vibe that I want to go for when making video, like short movies stuff about Tekaro stories. I do a lot of video production stuff for work, though. I linked one of them in the show notes. It's about my experiences running that Praise My GitHub Profile app and me failing at SRE stuff when it went on the front page of Hacker News. But a lot of the other stuff I write is comments, tweets, and I do have a journal. It is on paper. I do not trust a computer for my journal. And it's mostly just with like bullet point outlines of stuff I did in a day and any key insights I learned so that I can go back and look and see that I've actually done things. ADHD is a bitch. The next question I got is, why do you maintain your blog? I have like two types of posts on my blog. The first one is where I'm making documentation to myself on how and why I did something, like putting my IRC client into a VM in Kubernetes. That is actually documentation for myself on how I did this and why I did this, so that when I look back later, I can figure out what the hell I was smoking. It's really there so that I know what I did so that I can fix it when it's broken. And in the process, I outlined the stuff I tried, the stuff I learned, and really the stuff that failed. I don't know why people are so protective and cagey of the stuff that they mess up, because humans learn better from failure than we do from success. So realistically, if you can document what you tried and specifically what failed, then that can really help people learn how to do stuff that works. I don't know. Maybe it's an ego thing. I guess it would be an ego thing. Silicon Valley is pretty egoic, yeah. Either way, the other type of post is the one where I'm specifically trying to teach people. And this is where I'll do things like that Pikmin video essay or that video on why I thought Zenless Zone Zero was Game of the Year potential, but then they ruined it with Gacha. Or that video on my experiences trying to scale a GPU app in anger after I was interrupted from my gaming session. And this is stuff where I'm just trying to, like, not only teach people, but also entertain you with a hint of absurdity. And specifically, I want to entertain people when I'm teaching them, because nobody's going to remember the boring tutorial on how to build a Docker image with PHP and Go in it. Realistically, that's going to be something that you reference once, look at, and then click away once you've got your thing working. Everyone is going to remember the talk or the post that made them laugh. And by making things memorable, I think it actually makes the lessons sink in a bit deeper. It does mean that I have like a 95% bounce rate or something, because people come to my website, they read one thing, and then they're like, okay, I am done now. I am going to go do something else and click away. And as far as I care about my metrics, that's totally fine. I don't expect someone to just like click on my blog and then start reading literally everything I've ever written, because that's not sustainable. I have like 500 articles. Nobody's going to do that. Those articles where I'm trying to teach people, a lot of the time, I'm trying to learn how to teach people better when I make them. I am actually doing way more experimentation and the like in even my throwaway blog post than you think, because I want to get better at this. I want to be able to write well, and I want to take the time that I'm spending to write to experiment with things. I don't always tell people what I'm experimenting with, and with a lot of it, I'll actually just like make the experiment kind of obvious and see if anyone notices it. Sometimes people in the patron Discord do. I did leave an Easter egg in my Kubernetes IRC client thing that one person has pointed out to me so far, and another person only noticed after I said there was an Easter egg there. So extra credit if you can find it and email me about it. And then finally, this person asked me, any tips or tricks on writing? This is the real meat of the email and probably comprises most of my response. When I write about things, I try to answer these questions in my drafting process. What is there? Why should I care? And how did you get there? These three questions really spell out the heart of how this kind of stuff lands the best. In my mind, some of the best articles on how to do absurd things like making your IRC client a VM on Kubernetes actually start out explaining why someone would want to do that in the first place. And in general, I think that the why part is actually even more critical than the what part, because the why part is how the topic integrates into the whole, into the other things you're doing, into the ecosystem. And once you get to the what and the why, the how is almost an exercise for the reader in comparison. And then in the process, you can branch into the things that you learned, the experiments that you tried, the things that worked, and the things that failed along the way. And also, really, just write. It's going to feel like pulling your hair out at first. You're going to look back at the things and find so many flaws in what you make. You are going to suffer from the curse of the artist. The curse of the artist is, as an artist, you can go and make a statue and then put it in a museum. People will walk into the museum, they will see the statue, and they will think it is great. They will think it is lovely. They will enjoy it. But then you, as the artist, are taking their feedback and trying to sound happy at it. But internally, you're looking at the right-hand pinky nail of the statue and realizing that there is a 2-micron-wide chip in there, and you are just beating yourself up internally for it. Nobody notices the chip, but you do. Because you made it. You know exactly what you did, and you know all of the flaws in perfect detail. That is the curse of the artist. I think I've heard this really explained well by Kadikaris. He's an absolutely hilarious YouTuber. highly suggest you watch him. He has like hour-long improv comedy videos about weird video games, and I love it so much. He's a huge inspiration for how I make videos, how I write, and how I do conference talks. And on getting better as an artist, he said, "Having a creative job is a never-ending loop of getting incrementally better while also shitting on yourself, so I really hope you're into that." And this is just so true. It is so true. Oh my gosh, it's... Like, when you do a creative job professionally, you end up getting skills, and you end up getting good at them. And you end up getting so good at them that they are second nature to you, and they stop feeling like skills. You just hold up your hands to the keyboard, you start thinking about Pikmin, and then suddenly, oh god, you've defecated 2,000 words about Pikmin, game design, and philosophy, and then you realize you have a take worth publishing. But you don't feel like you've done anything special. You just feel like it's sort of happened to you. That's the other frustrating part about being a creative, is because once you get past the part where you just actively cringe at what you're making as you're making it, you just start actively cringing what you make after you've made it. You got to take advantage of those instinctive skills, though. And it's hard because, as I said, they don't feel like skills. They just feel like you do the thing. But they are skills. They took effort to get there, and they are skills. And realistically, when you start writing a lot, you'll stop hating your writing by the third or fourth article. Just write. Just publish it. Get the bad articles out of your system. And most importantly, when you've published them and you go back and cringe at them later, don't delete them. Keep them up. Because those articles are not just bad articles. They are proof of where you have been. Because when you write something or create something, you are actually creating a snapshot of your capabilities in time. And then you can use that as a direct comparison from where you've been to where you are. And you can use that to see the way that you've improved in ways that you just fundamentally cannot if you delete them. I look back at my old posts. I cringe, yes. But I look back at my old posts and I see where I've been and where I am now. Take advantage of that. That is such a huge way to help you gauge where your progress is as an artist. And it's well, well worth the feelings of cringe. And if anything, if you're cringing at your past work, that means you've improved. That is proof of your success. Listening to your voice recorded still is kind of hard, even after doing video editing for yourself. Like, as I'm editing this right now, I'm going to be slightly cringing at my voice, and this is something that I've gotten over, because, you know, voice training has you listen to your voice a lot, and that makes you get over, like, the revolting side of it, but you still sort of internally cringe at how you say things, and you'll be fine. Just don't think about it. And with that, thank you for listening to ZCast. I've been Z, and next time I'm going to try to have a guest on. I have been avoiding having guests so far because I want to make the logistics for this podcast simpler, so I actually do it. But this is the third episode, and I think I have a system now for how I want to do this. I'm feeling a lot better about this now. I feel comfortable in how I'm articulating myself, how the podcast is being produced, and just my own skills as a podcaster. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, have a good day. Stay hydrated. Make sure to get your 30 minutes of cardio in, and stay safe. I've been Z, and this has been ZCast. Signing off. Stay frosty.